fourth-party candidates into the debate who would then call into question U.S. posture toward Israel or the drug war or the criminal justice system or a whole variety of other issues where both parties agree, including trade, would open up the range of issues that Americans start questioning and start thinking about and start challenging that they never think about now because the two major parties agree. And I've watched here in Brazil, for example, where there's all kinds of parties and 8 or 10 parties or 6 parties participate in the presidential election. So you have far left and far right and center parties where all views get aired. And you contrast that to the United States, where a tiny range of issues get debated because only 2 sides are heard. And that's exactly the way both parties want it.
Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept speaking to us from his home in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. You can visit our website to watch the first part of our interview when we talked about the impeachment trial of Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff, Bernie Sanders' opposition to the coup in Brazil, the Clinton Foundation, and the future of Rio after the Olympics. That does it for our broadcast. Go to democracynow.org. And a very happy birthday to Hani Massoud. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Chirina Nadura, and Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Miriam Barnard, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Besta Goodars. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO. Portland.
Join KBOO Community Radio at Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, September the 8th for United We Stand Up, a comedy show and a benefit for KBOO. I'm T6 and I'll be your host that night, which will feature local comedians like Betty Lungen, Bree Pruitt, Adam Potsy, Brandy Morgan, Belinda Giles, Noriko Ott, and Debbie Wooten. Raffles, refreshments, and good times for all. Again, that's United We Stand Up, Thursday, September the 8th, at Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Doors at 6:30, showcase at 7:30. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO's membership drive is coming up in September. Help us promote the work of this amazing station by following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now Snapchat, rating our app on the iTunes and Google Play Store, and joining our Facebook event for the And don't forget to join or renew your membership. Just click donate on our website or app and start your monthly contribution to your community radio, KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Androids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, kids are leading this month's special hike from the environmental organization BARC. We chat with them live in Studio 2.
The City of Portland votes to extend the official homeless crisis designation for one other year.
And the movement to free Leonard Peltier holds a special event at Pioneer Courthouse Square this Friday to push President Barack Obama to commute the Native American civil rights figure's sentence.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled today that a federal ban on the sale of guns to medical marijuana cardholders does not violate the Second Amendment. The ruling applies to the 9 states in the court's territory, including Oregon, California, and Washington. The lawsuit was filed by S. Rowan Wilson after a Nevada gun store refused to sell her a weapon because she had a medical marijuana card. The store owner cited a federal rule that bans the sale of firearms to users of illegal drugs, which, under federal law, marijuana still is. Senior District Judge Jed Rakoff ruled the ban was legal because the use of marijuana, quote, raises the risk of unpredictable behavior with which gun use should not be associated. No word yet on whether Ms. Wilson will appeal the ruling.
Within the past few minutes, the Portland City Council wrapped up their meeting on whether or not to extend the housing emergency they declared last year to address houselessness. They decided to decide again next week. The original ordinance was passed on October of 2015 for a period of 1 year, with the option to extend 6 months at a time. The council is set to vote tonight on whether to extend that ordinance for an additional 3 years, and whether the city can continue to waive portions of zoning code in order to create large temporary shelters. Right to Dream 2 camp co-founder Ibrahim Mubarak was invited to speak to the council on the issue. This week he learned that the city's plans to resite the camp have been blocked by a judge, but Right to Dream must still leave its present location by October 31st. Mubarak was followed by Israel Baer, publisher of Street Roots newspaper.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mubarak.
Here we go again.
Give us your name.
Ibrahim Mubarak. I'm CEO of Right to Survive and chairman of Right to Dream 2. What we deal with is people that are torn and broken and tired, and you want to bring a state of emergency, which you had once, and the other grassroots organizations like Hazelnut Grove, Lost Round, Dignity Village, and Right to Dream 2 went out telling the people who was living on the streets in the Springwater Quarter, in bushes and vacant houses, cars and RVs, that it's okay to sleep on the street for a certain amount of time. And then the police came and arrested and swept people. So I really don't trust this unless it's written. You say it on the news and everybody know, and tell the police to stop sweeping the people if this is going to go. And it should go for more than a year. It should go until we have a solution, not an in the meantime solution for people to get inside. You're putting all these money into all these organizations, all these ANIFs and BUS. You need to make affordable housing, subsidized housing. You need to stop the rent raise, put a rent freeze on where people who work and live on the streets can afford apartments. If you bring more affordability, I believe you'll put a 30% cut in houselessness on the street. If you bring more subsidized housing instead of high condos, you'll put at least 40% in a rave. You make family institutions for families to go into places, for people with pets to go into places. You are cut by 50% of people living on the streets. You want emergency housing and houseless act, then why are you sweeping the Springwater Quarter? Where are those people going to go? Why did Aluva stop Right to Dream 2 from moving to a spot where we can provide more places for houseless people? Why are you trying to move right Hazelnut Grove and Forgotten Ram? You need to make more RV camps for people who live in there and make spaces for people who live in the cars. I know you tried to do that before, but the neighborhood association, they got to realize that we are their neighbors. We should be involved in the neighborhood association. If we're going to make plans for people that's affected, you need people with more the grassroots community in these plans making things, because we know what it is that can make us successful. You need to start recycling knowledge and not just bottles and bricks and wood and cardboard. You need to recycle knowledge, because the houses community do know things, and they do know things how to get inventive to make them more productive. So this act that you're trying to pass, this emergency thing, it'll only work if we can sit at the table and help you tweak the messages and the things that need to be done in there. And you need to make Adamy reach the police and tell them to stop sweeping people and stop the landlord for raising the price of rent. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Baer, just give us your name.
Hi, my name is Israel Baer, and I'm with Street Roots. Thank you for having me today. I came less today to talk about the substance of the ordinance and to just say that, an emergency in the context of homelessness and housing has been happening in our community for people of color and poor people for 40 years. And it is, you know, really just this mayor and all of you that have taken responsibility for the first time for that crisis. And we could debate until we're blue in the face about why those reasons are, but I think that we all understand at a very complex level that there is a growing divide between government and the people. And to be able to show courage, I commend you all for all the work that you've done, all the work that we're doing. Obviously, I don't always agree with all the policies that take place surrounding this issue, but I think that we can all agree that we are in a state of emergency. We have been in a state of emergency. After this, I'm directly going to meet with the mother of someone who lost her son on the streets recently. And, you know, I don't have a lot to offer her other than a listening ear. And so it's a hard knock life out there. We appreciate your support. We want you to do more. And we just ask you to not always do things that are politically viable, but to do what is right. So thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
Meanwhile, housing activists are preparing for the city's big sweep of the Springwater Corridor tomorrow. Tune in tomorrow night for more about the Springwater Corridor sweep.
Beginning tomorrow, Portland property owners will be required to wait 120 days for a demolition permit after they take their property off the city's historic resources inventory. That's a list of roughly 5,000 properties. Prior to now, rules dictated that a 120-day delay only applied to owners removing a, quote, historic resource designation from their property. The city has previously argued that being listed on the HRI is not synonymous with a designation, though this change appears to backtrack on that position after years of issuing immediate demolition permits. The Close the Loophole Coalition has demanded the new delay for months, and member Meg Hansen told the Portland Mercury, quote, great to hear, but... She acknowledges that the new waiting period is, quote, still just a delay and that there's still more work to do. Newly enforced delays will only be applicable to ranked properties on the HRI, which prioritizes properties by their likely historical significance and often leaves lower priority sites without a ranking.
While the rumor mill is still abuzz, City Bikes, a worker-owned cooperative since 1990, is closing its doors, it turns out that only its annex at Southeast 8th and Ankeny is shutting down. The original location, at Southeast 20th and Ankeny, will remain open. City Bikes Collective member Ryan Smith told Bike Portland's Jonathan Moss, quote, the main factor is that people who used to come here don't live in Portland anymore. The co-op, which owns both of their properties, plans to rent out the annex storefront and continue using the house attached to it for storage and offices.
Isaac and Miko Vergen are local youth activists working to address climate change. They are involved with Our Children's Trust and Plant for the Planet. As Plant for the Planet ambassadors, they lead a youth activism workshop called Plant for the Planet Academy. BARC reached out to them to bring their message and activism to BARC's Summer Base Camp, BARC's free, family-friendly volunteer campout in Mount Hood National Forest over Labor Day weekend, which is Climate Action Weekend, co-hosted by 350PDX to help educate and empower young people to take action on climate change. Thanks for coming in, Isaac and Miko.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves? How old are you? Where do you go to school? What do you like to do?
My name is Isaac. I'm 14 years old, and I am a freshman at the International School of Beaverton. And what I like to do in my free time is I like to play basketball.
I'm Miko, and I'm 15, and I'm a sophomore at the International School of Beaverton, and I was born in the Marshall Islands, which is one of the places that are suffering from climate change. And what I like to do in my free time is also play basketball, also read, and also redecorate my room.
And do a little activism as well, right?
Yeah.
So you both are going to be leading the Plant for the Planet Academy on Sunday, September 4th. Tell us what Plant for the Planet is and what's an academy.
So Plant for the Planet is a UN-sponsored organization that holds free one-day academies for children. And basically what we do there is teach kids how to talk about climate change, and we teach them about climate change as well so that they can go home and motivate other children and take action as well, and part of this, and become climate activists as well, and also go home and motivate other children to be part of the movement as well.
Anything to add, Isaac?
No, that was really good.
All right, well, this one's for you then. Why don't you talk about your upcoming academy in Mount Hood National Forest?
We're going to be camping out on Saturday night, and then the Sunday we're going to be starting the Plant for the Planet Academy at 9 a.m., and we will be starting out with a presentation from my sister and I and another Plant for the Planet ambassador, Sarah Temple, who also goes to school with us. During the day, throughout the day, we will be selecting other students to learn the presentation and to give it at the end to the community and their parents, who are also going to be there.
So, well, how will you select these other students?
We will be doing a few activities. In the beginning, we'll give them one or two slides, and they will present it to their group of six or so kids. And the group will determine who did the best in the group. Yeah.
All right. How did you guys get involved with BARC's volunteer campout?
BARC reached out to us, and we wanted to share our message with them at this campout.
And what have you done since becoming ambassadors?
Basically, after becoming ambassadors, my brother and I, for a long time, have been attending rallies and marches and also testifying at places like the Portland City Council when they were banning Portland from making more oil terminals. And in 2 weeks, we are going to Eugene, to the Eugene Courthouse, to be part of the lawsuit. Basically, my brother and I, along with 19 other youth, have sued the government and Barack Obama for violating our rights to life, liberty, and property, for the promotion and distribution and burning of fossil fuels, and also not acknowledging the atmosphere as a public trust.
And I'm curious, Isaac, were you involved in the testimonial to Portland City Council as well? Were you there?
Yeah, I was with Miko, and we also did another testimony for Vancouver City Council.
And what's it like to stand up in front of these councils?
Well, at first it was kind of scary because, like, we're like one of the only kids talking in front of a whole bunch of adults, but after a while we get kind of used to it, and a lot of people know us, so it's normal.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else would you like us to know about your experiences?
Well, recently my sister and I were elected to the Plant for the Planet Global Children's and Youth Boards, because Plant for the Planet is a United Nations sponsored program, so it's not only in the United States, it's in 52 other countries as well, and with 46,000 other ambassadors. And I'm the president of the Children's Board, Plant for the Planet Children's Board.
What would you guys say to other kids who might want to get involved in some of these issues, but maybe might worry that they're too young to make a difference?
I would say that being too young is what you should be, the perfect age to start doing this, because the younger you are, the more people will listen to you, and it's their future, so you can't just sit aside and watch other people vouch for you. You gotta vouch for yourself and other future generations.
And yeah.
Anything to add, Miko?
I don't think anyone is too young, because, as he said, it's our future. So it's really important that the children stand up, because we're not old enough to vote on any of these acts or anything. So it's really important that we speak up and talk about how this is directly affecting our future and we have to clean up after everyone.
Speaking of that future, do you each have a goal for the future about what you want to do when you're finished with school?
Yeah. When I finish with school, hopefully the lawsuit that we are currently in goes through, and I want to attend the University of Hawaii and become a marine biologist.
Very nice.
What I want to do in the future, basically, I have a few ideas, but one of them is also like environmental,
and doing some work for the environment in some capacity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it comes to you, you let me know. So what do you hope, who do you hope is going to come to the event this weekend? Who are you hoping to see?
We're hoping to see a bunch of kids. And usually we've had so far 6 academies here in Oregon. And usually there's like 20 to 40 kids that attend. So.
All right. Let's see. Is there anything else you would want people to know about what's going to be happening this weekend?
That they should bring their kids. And if they know any kids, ask them to sign up at Bark's
at,
website.
At, and that's www.bark-out.org. Yeah. Is that right? Okay.
And they should register right away at climatechangerecovery.org.
Okay. And lastly, I got a big question for you. What impact do you want your work to have on the planet and on your local community?
Well, part of our goal right now is to get more youth involved and become climate activists, because I think the most important activists are children.
And what I want my community to get involved more than what we're doing, and that hopefully it will make a difference.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Isaac and Miko. Go to www.barkout.org, that's bark-out.org, under events to find out how to register for the academy, what to bring if you plan to camp out with Bark for the weekend, and to hear about other workshops, hikes, and activities happening during Climate Weekend at Base Camp. That's www.bark-out.org. Thanks.
Thanks.
A Portland-based environmental justice and civil rights group held a rally outside TriMet's Portland headquarters today in support of a reduced-rate TriMet fare for low-income riders. Opal Environmental Justice Oregon has asked that the Regional Transportation Agency offer $28 monthly fares to low-income riders. That's the same fare that's currently charged to senior citizens and riders with disabilities. Opal and Bus Riders Unite say the issue has become more urgent as housing costs have skyrocketed. TriMet has commissioned its own study of reduced fare options earlier this year, but has yet to receive a final report.
Governor Kate Brown and Oregon Innovation Officer Colt Gill paid a personal visit to Madison High School earlier today. The objective was to highlight the value of hands-on, career-oriented courses as a tool to reduce Oregon's low graduation rate. Oregon's graduation rate was only 74% in 2015. That's one of the lowest in the country. Brown and Gill paid a visit to a class on medical interventions and another on digital design. Brown has come out strongly in favor of Oregon Measure 97, the proposed corporate tax, as a way to increase education funding in the state. She has placed particular emphasis on early childhood education, lengthening the school year, and reducing classroom overcrowding. The governor admitted, however, that state agencies were already looking for opportunities to cut spending if Measure 97 does not pass. She went on to say that she would prioritize education funding and hope to spare it from any cuts.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for news from the BOO at 5:45, followed by a brand new show, Keeping It Real, hosted by students from Rose Murray Anderson High School at 6 o'clock. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be cooler and rainy, with highs about 67 degrees. East of the Cascades in Hood River, tomorrow should be rainy and 66 degrees. Today in history, on August 30th, 1861, Union General John C. Fremont instituted martial law in Missouri and declared enslaved people there to be free. President Lincoln disagreed, however, and canceled Fremont's order in October of that same year. Lincoln believed that emancipation had to be enshrined in the Constitution to withstand the many challenges that would be brought against it. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation 16 months later. Our quote of the day is from Abraham Lincoln, who said in 1858, "This is a world of compensations, and he who would be no slave must consent to have no slave. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves, and, under a just God, cannot long retain it."
It's 5:25, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
You don't have to be in who's who to know what's what. For example, if a tiny group of Wall Street bankers, billionaires, and their political puppets are allowed to write the rules that govern our economy and elections, guess what? Only bankers, billionaires, and puppets will profit from those rules. That's exactly why our land of opportunity has become today's land of inequality. Corporate elites have bought their way into the policy-making backrooms of Washington, where they've rigged the rules to let them feast freely on our jobs, devour our country's wealth, and impoverish the middle class. There's good news, however. A growing grassroots coalition of churches, unions, civil rights groups, citizen activists, and many others is organizing and mobilizing us to crash through those closed doors, write our own rules, and reverse America's plunge into plutocracy. Called Take on Wall Street, the coalition's structural reforms include getting the corrupting cash of corporations and the super-rich out of our politics by repealing Citizens United and providing a public system for financing America's elections, stopping too-big-to-fail banks from subsidizing their high-risk speculative gambling with the deposits of us ordinary customers, making them choose to be a consumer bank or a casino, but not both. Instituting a tiny Robin Hood tax on Wall Street speculators to discourage their computerized gaming of the system, while also generating hundreds of billions of tax dollars to invest in America's real economy. Restoring low-cost, convenient postal banking in our post offices to serve millions of Americans who are now at the mercy of predatory payday lenders and check-cashing chains. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about this campaign and its reform agenda to democratize America's financial system, go to www.takeonwallstreet.org. Takeonwallstreet.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
The opportunity for public to comment about the Environmental Protection Agency's cleanup plan for Portland Harbor is drawing to a close. In June, the EPA proposed a seven-year, $750 million plan to address one of the nation's most polluted waterways. The 90-day public comment period will end on September 6th. KBOO's Emery Mort spoke to Barbara Quinn of the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group.
If I'm a citizen concerned with the river, concerned with pollution and PCBs and the air and the fish, and I say, yeah, I actually want the EPA to be regulating this cleanup and to be running it. What do you think is the best thing that someone can do?
Yes, we absolutely need citizens to weigh in on this plan and make a comment to the EPA about their feelings about how important this cleanup is and how important a clean river is. And how important it is to stand up to these businesses and say, we want to see responsible disposal methods put in place. We want to see all these upland businesses, the sources that are coming from them to be controlled, because right now they're not. As we speak, there are businesses that are leaking, dumping, or whatever into the river through their property. They are not all being controlled at this point. And DEQ has its hands full just doing that much. They're working on the upland sources. They've got plenty to do there. And EPA has far more background and ability to do the in-water part. But we need citizens to go to comment to the EPA, and you can do that online at cleanupportlandharbor.org, or you can send an email to EPA through harbor comments at epa.gov. And there are some other methods that you can actually find to get a hold of them on our website, which is portlandharborcag.info. And one of the background information that people need to know is that there are some very bad chemicals in the sediments, the bottom sediments of this 10-mile stretch between the Broadway Bridge and the confluence. And PCBs are probably the worst of them. They're spread all over the site. They can, it has been shown through studies that they can go up through the water and into the air. You cannot smell them or see them, and there are definitely some studies that show that they're carcinogens at the very least, but they do other bad things to people as well. But they are getting into the chain of life in the river, and it makes it really dangerous to fish.
Absolutely. If you're, I hear on the radio, you know, if you're a woman who's pregnant, you shouldn't be eating essentially any fish from the Willamette River because of the potential for contamination. Am I correct when I say that this portion of the river is a Superfund site? It's one of the most complexly polluted waterways in the entire country. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's one of the biggest sites, and it's one of the most complex sites.
There is an event coming up Wednesday evening, 7 to 9. Tell us a little bit, if we got listeners who are like, I want to go learn more about this. I want to meet other people who are interested in this. I want to have a say. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have a community forum on the Willamette Superfund, and we're going to have our community consultant, Dr. Peter Defer from Virginia, here to talk about his review of complete review and summary of the proposed plan that's being offered for the cleanup. And so he's going to give us insight on, you know, exactly, you know, in plain language that everyone can understand what's being, you know, offered in this proposal and what some of the issues are for the community.
Can people also hand write? Because I know handwritten letters are helpful. Can they call anyone? Go ahead.
Absolutely. They can hand write letters. They can also email. And I just like to reiterate again, Emery, why it's important for people to do these comments, get those comments in before September 6th.
Hugely important. Great.
Yeah, hugely important because the amount of comments we get and the quality of comments we get can actually move the needle on this cleanup and make it a better cleanup. And so we're looking to you, the largest group of stakeholders, bar none. There are no stakeholders in this process that are more important, as far as we're concerned, than the community. And you can write to Harbor Comments, U.S. EPA at 805 Southwest Broadway Street, Suite 500, Portland, Oregon, 97205. Or you can go to the website cleanupportlandharbor.org, and you can actually comment to the EPA on that site.
Great.
Or you can email harborcomments@epa.gov. And most of the sites, the site we have, our website, portlandharborcag.info, has all this information on it. And I believe that Clean Up Portland Harbor does as well.
Barbara Quinn of Portland Harbor CAG, I want to thank you and your organization for your work. And thank you so much for being on the air with us here at KBOO.
Thank you.
Interested listeners are invited to attend the community forum this evening from 7 o'clock to 9 at Unite Oregon, located at 700 North Killingsworth. Listeners can also get more information at portlandharborcag.info or comment directly to the EPA at their website, cleanupportlandharbor.org.
Florida authorities recently reported the first cases of local Zika transmission in the United States, prompting Senator Marco Rubio to speak out against abortion for women pregnant with the Zika virus. Though the virus is fairly benign for most adults, it has been shown to cause microcephaly in fetuses, a severe and debilitating birth defect in which the baby's head does not develop properly. The senator is quoted as saying, "I'm pro-life, and I'm strongly pro-life. I believe all human life should be protected by our law, irrespective of the circumstances or condition of that life." Rubio was the first Republican to co-sponsor President Obama's $1.9 billion Zika fight legislation, though only $1.1 billion was ultimately approved by the Senate in May. He previously cited an estimate from CDC Director Tom Frieden that the cost of caring for a child born with microcephaly could reach $10 million over the course of his or her lifetime.
In Texas yesterday, a 15-member state task force issued a maternal mortality report showing that for the years 2011 and 2012, black mothers accounted for 11% of Texas births, but 29% of pregnancy-related deaths. It's the second such report released within the past week. A national study released last week showed that since 2010, the Lone Star State has been one of the most dangerous places in the developing world to have a baby. The task force also pointed to a high incidence of severe maternity morbidity, complications from pregnancy that are so serious that mothers might have died without major medical or technological intervention. About 60% of maternal deaths occurred 6 weeks or more after delivery. Medicaid benefits, which cover more than half of the nearly 400,000 births in Texas every year, expire for many mothers 60 days after they give birth. In 2011, the Texas legislature slashed funding for family planning clinics that serve low-income women.
Democratic Representative Deborah Wasserman Schultz won her Tuesday primary, beating out law professor Tim Canova to hold onto her seat in the Florida primary. This win came in spite of her resignation in July as Democratic National Committee chair after a leak of emails between DNC staffers appeared to show the party working to get Hillary Clinton elected, even though it was to remain neutral during the primary. The six-term Congresswoman won by an unusually low margin for a member of Congress, garnering just 57% of the vote to Canova's 43%. Canova, a first-time candidate, became one of the most watched people in the country after Senator Bernie Sanders sent out fundraising emails on his behalf and endorsed him in late May. Rob Davis, coordinator for the Florida chapter of the grassroots anti-corruption group Mayday US, spoke of the victory and said that the fact that this race was a competitive, quote, sent a powerful message to the corrupt political establishment and put others on notice. You can't back big money over the people and not face consequences on election day.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael wants to get past Hillary and Donald and back to active democracy.
There's more to democracy than elections. I don't want to worry about elections because it doesn't matter if our next president's Hillary or Don the Mad Hatter. Only two more months of electoral distractions, then the powers will find other ways to prevent meaningful actions. Just one police shooting rules the news for a week. Some bombing, some flood, some conservative freaks. Here they're clearing spring water of the homeless in their tents while building taller condos with astronomical rents. When the people and their leaders live on opposite sides of town, the conditions most of us live under won't go anywhere but down. Before we start cocooning from the wind and the rain, there's plenty strong reasons to take to the streets again. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. It's great weather for a protest. Go outside and say something.
Members of Brazil's Senate overwhelmingly voted today to confirm the impeachment of the suspended president Dilma Rousseff. Sam Cowie reports from Sao Paulo.
Pro-impeachment senators sang the national anthem and waved Brazilian flags during the announcement of the result of the vote to permanently oust Dilma Rousseff over accounting irregularities in the country's budget. 61 senators voted to confirm the suspended president's impeachment, 7 more votes than needed. Rousseff and her allies have long alleged that the charges against her are politically motivated. Next came the vote on whether to withdraw the eligibility to run for office. Rousseff won that round, meaning technically she could campaign for re-election in 2018. This stands in contrast to her replacement. Acting President Michel Temer is banned from running for office for 8 years, having committed an electoral crime. Addressing the nation from the presidential palace in Brasilia for the last time, Rousseff once again declared that she is the victim of a coup.
It is the second coup I face in life. The first, the military coup, was with weapons of repression and torture, which I suffered as a young militant. The second, a parliamentary coup today through a legal farce, which knocks me from the position for which I was elected by the people.
Michel Temer was sworn in as president hours after the vote and just before embarking on a visit to China, his first international trip as head of state. Temer is a traditional conservative politician that is expected to make deep cuts to social spending programs enacted by Rousseffi's Workers' Party. Sam Cowie for FSRN, Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Mexico's president has fired the country's federal police chief in the wake of new evidence of extrajudicial executions by federal forces. Free Speech Radio News' Shannon Young has more.
Mexico's Interior Secretary announced Monday that Federal Police Commissioner Enrique Galindo had been replaced, effective immediately, and on direct orders from President Enrique Peña Nieto. While not giving concrete details about what caused the dismissal, the Interior Secretary cited the need for a transparent investigation and alluded to, quote, recent events. Galindo led Mexico's federal police force for the last 4 years. His dismissal comes less than 2 weeks after the country's National Human Rights Commission issued an uncharacteristically scathing report on a deadly incident involving alleged criminals and federal police. In May 2015, 42 civilians and one police officer died on a ranch in Tanhuato, Michoacán, in what Galindo said was a confrontation between his agents and members of the Jalisco New Generation cartel. But the National Human Rights Commission found federal police statements contradicted key forensic evidence. Weapons had been planted, and in multiple instances, the deaths did not result from a shootout. Human Rights Commission investigator Ismael Eslava says almost 24 of the dead showed clear signs of extrajudicial execution.
22 of the victims were killed in a disadvantaged position in relation to their aggressors. 13 of them had their backs turned to those who killed them.
According to the commission's report, at least 5 were shot at from a helicopter. The Tanhuato incident is not the only one in which federal police are accused of unnecessary use of deadly force. Earlier in 2015, federal police agents carried out a deadly operation against members of an armed citizen self-defense group, also in the state of Michoacán. 16 people were killed in what survivors described as an ambush, a massacre, and a cover-up. And in June, at least 8 people died when federal police used force against protesters and townspeople in Nochixlán, Oaxaca. Again, evidence contradicts initial federal police statements. Authorities say an investigation is ongoing. Commissioner Enrique Galindo has been replaced by a longtime close associate, who prior to this week was in charge of the Gendarmerie Division of the same police agency. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca City.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, Dan Raphael, Carter Augusta Wallace, and our producer is Lisa Loving. Special thanks to Emery Moore, Democracy Now!, and Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer tonight is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook or on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH for Lomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Voices from the Edge, host Joanne Hardesty speaks with representatives from Opal Environmental Justice Oregon about their low-income transit fare campaign. At 9, hear Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering hosts a discussion of Syria and Hillary, and when the U.S. first became involved in the Syrian rebellion. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Bethany Grabo talks with Jesse Klein, author of the memoir You'll Grow Out of It. And at 11:30, hear Black Book Talk with Patricia Welch, Emma Jackson Ford, and O.B. Hill. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
That's right. Check your watch. It's 5:45 on a Wednesday, which means time once again for News from the Boo, our weekly roundup of items of interest here at the station and in the greater KBOO listening community. Tonight, we've got a conversation with Tommy Moore, better known as T6, producer of United We Stand Up comedy show at the Clinton Street Theater next Thursday, September 8th, and with Monica Beamer, KBOO's station manager.
I'm Natasha Delapai. Tonight, we're going to talk with Tommy Moore. He's known also as T6. Host and producer of United We Stand Up comedy show at the Clinton Street Theater next Thursday, September 8th.